Welcome to another episode of the ASMR University Podcast. I'm Dr. Craig Richard, and this podcast explores the history, the art, and the science of autonomous sensory meridian response. This episode is a summary of the data from the first peer-reviewed research publication about ASMR. The paper is titled Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, a Flow-Like Mental State. And it is authored by Emma Barrett and Nick Davis. At the time of the publication, the authors were members of the Department of Psychology at Swansea University in the United Kingdom. The publication was officially published as a peer-reviewed publication on March 26, 2015, but was initially published as a preprint on December 18, 2014. The study was initially reviewed and approved by the Swansea University Department of Psychology Ethics Committee prior to the initiation of data collection. The data in the publication was collected from an online survey, which was completed by 475 participants. These participants consisted of a similar number of males and females and were aged from 18 to 54 years, with an average age of 25 years. The survey participants resided throughout the world, with the strongest representation from the USA and Western Europe. Now I'll go ahead and delve into the data from the paper. I won't cover all the data, but I will summarize most of it. Why did the participants watch ASMR videos? The most common answer selected by 98% was to relax. 82% selected to help me sleep. 70% selected to deal with stress. And one of the least selected answers, by only 5% of the participants, was the option for sexual stimulation. Which items triggered tingling sensations for the participants when viewing ASMR videos? The most common option selected by 75% of the participants was whispering. 69% selected personal attention. 64% selected crisp sounds. 53% selected slow movements. 36% selected repetitive movements. 13% selected smiling. 3% selected airplane noise. 2% selected vacuum cleaner noise. And 2% also selected laughing. What time of the day did the participants watch ASMR videos? And for this question, they could select more than one option. the most common option selected by 81% was before sleeping. 30% selected whenever I have spare time. 4% selected upon waking. 2% selected mid-morning. And 2% selected midday. Did the participants require specific conditions to achieve ASMR? The most common response by 52% was yes. 48% selected no. This question also had an area for open comments. And the most common comment was that there was a requirement for quiet and relaxed conditions when experiencing ASMR. At what age did participants first experience, quote, this tingling sensation, unquote? The most common response from 51% was between the age of 5 and 10. 14% selected at 5 years. And 9% selected after 18 years. Did the tingling sensation originate in one area of the participants' bodies? The most commonly selected answer was yes by 63% of the participants. And of this group, 41% specified that the sensation originated in their head, and 29% specified it originated in their shoulders. The remaining 27% selected no to this question. Did any medications affect the experience of tingling at all? The majority of participants did not report using any medication, but 112 participants did report using a medication. And of these 112 participants using a medication, 92% were unsure of any effect of the medication on ASMR. 5% reported no effect of the medication on ASMR, and about 3% reported decreased ASMR due to an antidepressant, sleeping pills, and the other drug mentioned was clonazepam. Did the participants feel that watching ASMR videos had an effect on their mood? The most common response was yes, from 80%. And the authors of the paper showed a graph of the mood scores to show that the average effect on the mood was positive. 6% selected no, and 14% did not select a response. The authors also did a data analysis to show that those scoring as high risk for depression demonstrated a large improvement to mood compared to those scoring as non-depressed. They also showed that a high risk for depression was correlated to a faster decrease of the effect of ASMR on mood. When participants were asked about mood and the tingles they experienced, about 50% reported a change in mood regardless of tingles experienced, and about 30% reported a change in mood only when tingles were experienced. Did any of the participants suffer from any chronic pain or illness? The majority did not, but 19% did select yes to this question. And of these participants suffering from a chronic pain or illness, about 44% felt that watching ASMR videos did not have an effect on their symptoms. About 42% felt that watching ASMR videos did have an effect on their symptoms. And about 14% did not specify. Did the participants have any family members that experience ASMR? The most commonly selected answer by 80% was unsure/I've never asked. 12% selected no, and 8% selected yes. Did any of the participants have any type of synesthesia? The majority of the participants did not have synesthesia, but 7.4%, or 35 of the participants, did select yes to this question. Of those 35 participants, 29 were assessed by follow-up to actually have synesthesia. The authors did a further data analysis to show that the prevalence of synesthesia in those who experience ASMR is slightly higher, but not significantly higher than the prevalence of synesthesia in the general population. Well, this wraps up my summary of the data from the first peer-reviewed research publication about ASMR. Welcome to another episode of the ASMR University Podcast. I'm Dr. Craig Richard, and this podcast explores the history, the art, and the science of autonomous sensory meridian response. This episode is about the second peer-reviewed research publication about ASMR. The paper is titled "An Examination of the Default Mode Network in Individuals with Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response," and it was published in the journal Social Neuroscience on May 31st, 2016. The authors are Stephen Smith, Beverly Fredberg, and Jennifer Kernelson from the University of Winnipeg in Manitoba, in Canada. This paper is obviously significant because it's the second research publication about ASMR, but it's also significant because it is the first published biological data about ASMR. In the prior episode, you heard about the first research publication, and they used an online survey as their main method. The authors of this second study used functional magnetic resonance imaging as their main method. This is also referred to as fMRI, or even just MRI. So let me begin by just giving a short explanation of what an MRI does. A very short explanation is that it measures blood flow in the brain. To give an indirect, although mostly accurate indication of brain activity. For a long time, the ASMR community and others outside the community have been greatly curious about what a MRI might reveal about ASMR. The first MRI study about ASMR was actually initiated in 2013 when Bryson Lochte started and completed MRI studies about ASMR for his senior thesis project at Dartmouth College. Although Bryson has not yet been able to publish his initial studies, he has continued to use MRI to investigate ASMR and may be publishing some data soon. So although Bryson is the first to use MRI to study ASMR, Stephen, Beverly, and Jennifer are the first to publish an MRI study on ASMR. So how did they do their study? The authors of this paper recruited 11 individuals whom experience ASMR, and this is referred to as the ASMR sensitive group. And they also recruited 11 individuals whom did not experience ASMR, and this is referred to as the control group. Both groups underwent an MRI to investigate if there were any major differences in their brain activity. The imaging process was done in the absence of any active ASMR triggers, and this was to identify potential underlying and baseline neuroanatomic differences between the two groups. So what did they find? The short answer is that they found differences in the functional connectivity between the brains of those who do experience ASMR compared to the brains of those who don't experience ASMR. Their study doesn't provide causal data, meaning it can't be concluded that the brain differences are the reason for experiencing or not experiencing ASMR. But their study does provide important associative data for a biological difference between those who can and those who can't experience ASMR. And as importantly, it is very encouraging for further biological studies about ASMR. All right, so that so far is just a brief summary about the paper and about the authors. To go more in depth, I'm also going to share an interview I did by email with two of the authors, Beverly Fredborg and Dr. Stephen Smith. At the time of the interview, Dr. Smith was an associate professor and Beverly was a research assistant. And here's some of the things you'll hear about in this interview. They're going to talk about their excitement of publishing the first biological study about ASMR. They're going to provide an explanation of what is an MRI. They're going to share how the idea for the MRI experiment developed, their methodology, and their results. They're going to talk about some of the challenges they had with the study. And they'll end the interview with a teaser about their next ASMR research publication. You're going to hear each of my questions first, and then their replies. Sometimes they both provided a reply to one of my questions, and sometimes just one of them provided a reply. To help you discern who was replying, and also to give you an ear-to-ear experience, you will hear Beverly's replies in your right ear, and Dr. Smith's replies in your left ear. I will also include a link to their publication in the show notes of this episode, along with a link to the transcript of this interview, in case you want to read either one on your own. And now, here is my interview with Beverly and Dr. Smith. Congratulations on the first biological publication about ASMR. How does that feel? And what type of reception has the paper received so far? Beverly, thank you so much. Everyone has been really supportive about the publication, which is exactly what we had hoped for. We submitted the paper for publication in late 2015. So when we finally found out that it was accepted and to be published, we were thrilled. We are so happy to hear that people seem to be interested in what we found. Dr. Smith, thanks. As Beverly said, it's wonderful that people are interested in the study. Apparently, in terms of internet presence, it's in the top 5% of research papers being tracked by Altmetric and has been tweeted about in the US, UK, Germany, Russia, Turkey, and India. Hopefully, that will lead to more research related to ASMR. You used a fMRI scanner in your study. How would you explain fMRI to a non-scientist? Dr. Smith. fMRI stands for Functional Magnetic Resonance Imaging, also referred to as MRI, and is a way of measuring the activity of cells in the brain. When a brain area is active, it uses up oxygen at a different rate than when it is not active. The brain responds to this by sending more oxygen-rich blood to that area of the brain. The catch is that oxygenated and deoxygenated blood, blood with normal levels of oxygen and blood with reduced oxygen levels, have different magnetic properties. The scanner can detect these differences thus showing us how the activity levels of various brain areas differ. How did the idea for this experiment evolve? Dr. Smith. I first learned about ASMR from a student in my introductory psychology class in late 2013. As soon as she described her experiences to me, I decided that we needed to see what brain areas were involved with ASMR. As someone who doesn't experience ASMR, I was fascinated by the idea that whispering or repetitive sounds could produce tingling responses that were associated with positive, calming emotions. The problem was that we weren't sure that people could relax enough in an MRI scanner to really experience ASMR. It's tough to relax when you're in a large tube, the MRI device, that is making loud noises. Knowing that several people are watching you and hoping you tingle would only add to the anxiety participants would feel. So although we're actively collecting data related to tingles, we also wanted to collect additional measures of brain activity that weren't dependent upon people experiencing tingles inside a scanner. This led us to resting state scans. In these scans, we collect the same functional MRI measurements of people as in other types of brain imaging studies. But instead of seeing what areas light up when a particular stimulus is presented, we measure brain activity when a person isn't performing any cognitive or perceptual task. Although that description seems silly at first, there is actually a ton of information we can glean from these resting state scans. The reason is that when you're not performing some sort of cognitive task, your brain cells are still firing. Otherwise, you'd be dead. And the firing rates of these cells fluctuate. As it turns out, the cells in particular brain areas tend to fluctuate at roughly the same frequency, suggesting that their activity is related. We therefore assume that these different brain regions are working together as a network, basically, as a team. Our recent paper was an examination of the best known of these networks, the default mode network. Looking at this network allowed us to see that the brains of people with ASMR differed from the rest of the population, even when they weren't actively experiencing tingles. How did you recruit and select the participants? Beverly. We essentially recruited all of our participants through word of mouth. It's pretty difficult to put up posters and ask for people to participate because it's pretty hard to explain what ASMR is through a short infographic or poster. A lot of people don't realize they have ASMR experiences, or conversely, believe they have them, but do not. ASMR differs from frisson. Although some people experience ASMR through means other than audiovisual stimuli, or with audiovisual stimuli and touch simultaneously, for instance, And for the purposes of our study, we only wanted participants with audio-visual ASMR. We aimed to homogenize the sample as much as possible. How did you determine the ASMR-sensitive participants from the control group? Beverly. We actually conducted hour-long interviews with participants, which I would ask them questions about the ASMR. For example, how long they have experienced it, what triggers them, etc. We would also watch a few popular ASMR videos together, and I would make notes on their experiences. Finally, I had all participants complete a self-created ASMR checklist. We wanted to be sure that they really did have ASMR, though currently there is no official diagnosis of ASMR. A few participants were ruled out through this interview, so it was important that it was done before they went through the scan. What were the participants doing during the scanning? Beverly. We had them rest for 7 minutes while in the scanner. By rest, I mean remain motionless with their eyes closed while still staying awake. We had them do more in the scanner later on, but we are still scanning participants for that study and as such do not have any results. What were the direct results of the MRI scans? Beverly. Essentially, we found that the default mode network in individuals with ASMR differs from that of the matched controls. Dr. Smith. The default mode network is made up of a number of different areas. When we're at rest, these areas tend to fire together, suggesting that they work as a network or team. We found that in ASMR, several of the regions involved in the default mode network don't fire together quite as consistently. But areas that aren't normally part of the default mode network were firing in the same pattern as this network. We're speculating that in ASMR, different resting state networks are blending in a way that doesn't typically occur in other people. This isn't bad. It's just different. We do need to caution people about overinterpreting the data, however. This study was quite small and is just a first step in the study of this phenomenon. We're definitely not making any definitive claims about ASMR. What interpretations do you have about the fMRI scan results? Beverly. The decreased functional connectivity found between the frontal lobes and sensory and attentional regions seen in individuals with ASMR may reflect a reduced ability to inhibit sensory emotional experiences. We also hypothesize that ASMR may involve a blending of multiple resting state networks, which has been seen in other studies of anomalous perception. Pretty cool. What challenges did you run into with this study? Beverly. Finding participants was challenging. And for this study, there were only 11. It was also difficult scheduling participants because our scanner is only available for research 4 hours a week. We also have been working on this study since 2014. It has been a long time coming, so it was great to finally publish something. Dr. Smith. I think a major challenge that we faced over the past 2 years is participant recruitment. Although the ASMR subreddit has over 100,000 subscribers, it's not always easy to find them, particularly in a mid-sized Canadian city. We also have the challenge that not all ASMR participants are alike. As we've noticed in some of our non-MRI research, there is a lot of variability in ASMR triggers and intensity. Unfortunately, we don't know if there are clear ASMR subtypes, so we don't know if this potential issue is affecting our results. I don't think it would for the default mode network study, because that network is quite pronounced. But I think ASMR studies being conducted in 5 years will have a better handle on which ASMR-related variables need to be controlled for. Do you have plans for further MRI experiments? Beverly. They are going on right now. Dr. Smith. I think we're a few participants away from being able to finish several neuroimaging studies related to ASMR. You've also collected data about ASMR and personality traits. What were the objectives of that study? Beverly. Essentially, we want to know if individuals with ASMR share certain personality traits, and if these traits are related to specific aspects of individuals' ASMR experiences. We're hoping to submit that for publication in the next month, although it would obviously still need to go through peer review. Perhaps we can talk about it more when it is hopefully published. Well, that is the end of the interview. And as an epilogue, the good news is that they have published their data about ASMR and personality traits. And I will probably be focusing on that paper in my next Science of ASMR episode. Welcome to another episode of the ASMR University Podcast. I'm Dr. Craig Richard, and this podcast explores the history, the art, and the science of autonomous sensory meridian response. And now to today's topic, which is the third peer-reviewed research publication about ASMR. The paper is titled An Examination of Personality Traits Associated with Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, and it was published in the journal Frontiers in Psychology on February 23rd, 2017. The authors are Beverly Fredborg, Jim Clark, and Stephen Smith from the University of Winnipeg in Manitoba, Canada. You may recognize the names of Beverly Fredborg and Stephen Smith because they were two of the authors who published the second peer-reviewed paper about ASMR, and I highlighted that published study in the prior podcast episode. Now, that prior study utilized fMRI to investigate biological differences between the brains of individuals who experience ASMR and the brains of individuals who do not experience ASMR. Now, this newer study, which I'll be talking about in this episode, utilized surveys to investigate personality differences between 290 individuals who experience ASMR and 290 individuals who do not experience ASMR. There were two personality traits in which the ASMR experiencers scored higher than the non-ASMR experiencers. The first higher trait was openness to experience. This may mean that ASMR experiencers are more likely to exhibit inventiveness and intellectual curiosity, prefer variety over routine, and/or seek intense and euphoric experiences. The second higher trait for those who experience ASMR was neuroticism. This may mean that ASMR experiencers are more likely to be emotionally reactive, vulnerable to stress, and/or often feel threatened. There were three personality traits in which the ASMR experiencers scored lower than the non-ASMR experiencers. The first lower trait was conscientiousness. This may mean that ASMR experiencers are more likely to be easygoing, flexible, spontaneous, careless, and/or unreliable at times. The second lower trait was extroversion. This may mean that ASMR experiencers are more likely to be solitary, reserved, reflective, and/or aloof. And the third lower trait was agreeableness. This may mean that ASMR experiencers are more likely to be analytical, detached, competitive, and/or argumentative. The group of individuals who experienced ASMR in this study also completed a survey about ASMR triggers. The following triggers are ranked from most intense to least intense for their perceived ability to stimulate ASMR-associated tingles. Number 1. Whispering. Number 2. Haircut simulation. Number 3. Tapping sounds. Number 4. Scratching sounds. Number 5. Watching someone touch another person's hair. Number 6. Watching someone draw. Number 7. Watching someone paint. Number 8. Watching others apply makeup and/or nail polish to another person. Number 9. Watching someone touch their own hair. Number 10. Watching others open a package. Number 11. Watching others apply makeup and/or nail polish to themselves. Number 12. Dentist simulation. Number 13. Chewing sounds. And number 14, which was the last one, which is therefore ranked as least intense for its perceived ability to stimulate ASMR-associated tingles, is watching others cook. So that overall is just a brief survey about the publication. To go more in depth, I'm going to share an email interview I did with the lead author, Beverly Fredborg, who prefers to be called Bev. In my interview with Bev, she shares how they recruited participants and determined ASMR sensitivity, what they discovered about personality traits and ASMR triggers, if challenges were encountered in their study, and the focus of their next research publication. To provide an ear-to-ear experience for those of you wearing headphones, you will hear Bev's replies to each of my questions alternate between your right ear and your left ear. I will also include a link to the publication in the show notes, along with a link to the transcript of this interview, in case you want to read either of them on your own. And now, here is my interview with Bev Fredborg. This is your second publication about ASMR. Is this a hopeful sign of many more ASMR research projects and publications in your future? The laboratory of Dr. Stephen Smith at the University of Winnipeg is still abuzz with research activity related to ASMR. So yes, this is a good sign. How did the idea for this study evolve? In 2015, Barrett and Davis published the first study of individuals with ASMR, which served as an inspiration for our work. We wanted to similarly survey individuals with ASMR, but use well-established, valid and reliable test measures to do so, as well as to administer our labs self-created ASMR questionnaire to a large group of people to see if it was a good measure of ASMR triggers. How did you recruit and select the participants? We asked the kind people on the ASMR subreddit to participate, and we had almost 300 people respond. It's wonderful to have so many people interested in spending their time to answer a survey about ASMR. This is exactly how we will learn more about it. How did you determine the ASMR-sensitive participants from the matched controls? We hired a survey company, Qualtrics, to find matched controls for us who are compensated for their time for completing the survey. We wanted to be sure that they did not have ASMR. So they were asked to watch a popular ASMR video and then answer a few screening questions about their experience while watching the video and about potential past ASMR experiences. It's not a perfect method, but is the best we can do given that so few people know and understand what ASMR is and often confuse ASMR with getting chills, also known as frisson, which appears to be a related, yet different concept. What survey tools did you use in this project? In this specific publication, we analyzed data from the Big Five Index and an ASMR checklist that we created. The Big Five Index is a well-established measure of personality characteristics used by psychologists and researchers around the world. The theory is that one's personality can be characterized by five major factors: openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. We wanted to see how individuals with ASMR and people without ASMR who are the same age and gender differ on each of these five factors. What associations did you find between personality types and ASMR? We found significant differences between ASMR participants and the control participants on all five factors of the Big Five Index. Specifically, we found that people with ASMR were more likely to report higher levels of neuroticism, as well as openness to experience, than control participants, which we had expected based on past research. In contrast, we found that people with ASMR were more likely to report lower levels of conscientiousness, extroversion, and agreeableness than control participants, which we had not expected. The paper, which is freely available, goes into much more detail on what we make of these findings. You also included an ASMR trigger checklist in your survey. How did you select the triggers for that list? We looked at popular ASMR YouTube videos for common triggers. In the Barrett and Davis paper from 2015, in which common ASMR triggers are reported. What did you learn from the answers to the ASMR checklist? It further affirmed that people very much differ on the types of stimuli that trigger their tingles. For instance, most individuals with ASMR appear to be triggered by whispering, but subsets of individuals with ASMR further enjoy tapping noises, watching someone get their nails or makeup done, haircut simulations, watching someone draw, etc. This isn't exactly a surprise. You can tell that people differ on their triggers just by looking at YouTube and seeing the vast number of unique videos. Regardless, it was interesting and valuable to see this reflected in the data. Perhaps further studies could look at why certain videos are triggering and which aren't. What is the threshold at which a video changes from pleasant to ASMR-inducing? And why certain people enjoy certain triggers over others? What challenges did you run into with this study? This study was relatively smooth sailing. We piloted our questionnaire on a small group of people and received a lot of great feedback about small details, which ended up being extraordinarily helpful and is a good practice to get into when doing survey research. When it was time to administer the questionnaire to the kind people on Reddit, we felt confident that we had the finished product we were looking for. We also had a great experience working with the team at the survey company Qualtrics, who provided us with the age and gender match control data in a very reasonable amount of time. What will be the focus of your next ASMR research publication? Hopefully, we'll be able to publish the other half of the data of this project, which focuses on measures of mindfulness. Mindfulness has already been touched upon by other research groups, including Barrett and Davis in their 2015 paper. So getting this data out there is important, as it will further provide a picture of how individuals with ASMR differ from those without it. Well, that concludes my summary and the interview about the third peer-reviewed publication about ASMR. In some future episodes, I'll be sharing some ASMR experiences which you and others have submitted to the Voices of ASMR project. If you've not done so yet, you can go to asmruniversity.com and click the link on the homepage that says Voices of ASMR. Until next time, I'm Dr. Craig Richard, and this has been an episode of the ASMR University Podcast.